Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975. And in between our episodes here, you can read their blogs on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, the Astros are knocking on the door of the division lead, but to sustain the pace might require some duct tape and some clever trades by Dana Brown. We'll get into that. So gents, the sports gods are often fickle and cruel. The good news, Astros take 7 of their last 10 division games, find themselves in the midst of their longest winning streak of the season. Lance McCullers took a major step towards becoming a viable starter in this rotation. Bad news, still no Yordan, and the really bad. Ronel Blanco was confirmed to need Tommy John surgery, sidelining him for the foreseeable future. Now, I sometimes admittedly view things from the perspective of orange-colored lenses, so I'm going to need you guys to help ground me while we are in the midst of Houston's longest win streak of the season. Following that superb start, what can we realistically expect from Lance McCullers Jr., and is it realistic to believe that his return can offset the loss of Ronel Blanco?
Boy, it feels like it better, but I don't think it's absolutely obligatory that McCullers picks up all that slack, which is a good thing, because if you want to call it being cautiously pessimistic, what reason is there to think that he's going to perform well, and without a physical hitch the rest of the season? Seeing the blow-away element with 12 strikeouts and 6 innings, right? 3 earned runs in 6 innings, that's the bare minimum to meet the definition of quality start. But you would take that absolutely every time. It's a 4.50 ERA. But if you go 3 and 6 innings and the bullpen keeps on keeping on, you like your chances in most of those games. What I will say I found curious, frankly, on Wednesday is that Joe Espada, anyone else who factored into the decision, they let McCullers go 102 pitches.
Yeah.
Nomar Valdez's max this season, pitches in an outing, is 101. Hunter Brown's max pitches in a start the season is 101. So I understand ramping him up, and McCullers had been in the 80s 2 starts ago and 91 his prior start. But I'm not going to say it was irresponsible, but I think it's questionable pushing him to 102. I would be stunned if McCullers can hold up with a regular diet of 100 pitches plus. Maybe they intend to give him an extra day off before his next start. The Astros are off the next couple of Mondays, and we know Ryan Gusto's going to get a start, and Colton Gordon's going to get a start, and probably another mystery starter along the way until Arrigetti gets back. But it was great to see from McCullers. But again, when I saw him allowed to go to 102, part of me thought, really?
I think it's fair to expect if he's healthy, he'll be right around his career ERA, 3.5, which is, you'll take that every day of the week. For me, I think it's more on Arrigetti to set off the loss of Blanco, to get him back, because then you have 4 somewhat proven arms in the rotation there. But they're thinking maybe July with Arrigetti, but who knows? Here the Astros go again, making stuff up. I don't know if y'all saw the appearance on the flagship. Dana Brown comes on. They ask about Arrigetti. He's like, yeah, you know, hopefully soon the cast is going to be off. He's going to start throwing. And then a few minutes later at the ballpark, they give updates on Blanco and Arrigetti and say the cast came off the day before and he's already started tossing. So what are we doing? Like, did Dana Brown not know, or did he just not want to share that on the station? Really strange. But it makes us have to question all this Yordan stuff even more. The Blanco stuff, it's more of the same from the Astros. Can you really expect Arrigetti to be back? But if you think about it, if he is kind of ramping up like a spring training starting over again, then, you know, what did they report around Valentine's Day? And then the season starts a little before April. So we project out 6 weeks or so, maybe six, seven weeks, maybe Arrigetti's actually back. Then I think you really have something there. The rotation could be in a good spot, but provided everybody else stays healthy, that's always a big thing. And you can't count on that stuff. Look what's happened to this rotation. And we got the update that Luis Garcia might be ready at the end of July, early August. That's one where I'm just kind of like, every time he seems to take a step forward, there's been a setback. So that's one where I'm hoping, but I'm not counting on Garcia at, you know, towards the back end of the summer here. So we'll see. But I think you get Arrigetti to go along with McCullers with your 1-2 punch of Fromber and Hunter Brown, I think you're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, Arrigetti, I think the natural target at this point is out of the All-Star break, which is mid-July, just after the midpoint in July. Garcia, and let's throw Christian Javier into the mix. You know, if one of those guys is a four-leaf clover you can pick up in August, then there's the issue of how do they perform coming back after such lengthy absences. That applies to Arrigetti, though it's not like he's been gone over 2 years a la Garcia, and over a year that it will be for Javier. And just to circle back to Lance McCullers, the season just crossed the one-third mark. If you're a healthy starter for a full season, you make 31, 32 starts. So two-thirds of that is about 20. McCullers has already made 5 starts. With two-thirds of the season, that would be, if stays healthy all the way, 24, 25 starts. Lance McCullers has made more than 22 starts one season in his career. So if he's going well, and the Astros are remaining solidly positioned in both the AL West and the wild card standings, I think it probably behooves them to take a stretch where McCullers gets a rest stint, if not on the IL, where he's just straight skipped a turn to try to conserve a little tread wear on the tires of that right arm. Because for how many years? I mean, mostly his whole career, he's been the next injury waiting to happen.
You have to keep in mind, too, Arrigetti's original prognosis was 6 weeks, and now we're hearing that he won't be ready until July sometime. Josh, you noted that Dana Brown was on Flagship giving the update on Luis Garcia's return, but it was interesting reading Chandler Rome's column on this when he talked about a slew of setbacks, in his words, for Luis Garcia. That's not something that's been publicly made available. It makes sense. I mean, it's something that we probably could have guessed given the timeline and the extended timeline and why this keeps getting pushed back. But the fact that they're so secretive with it, and if you believe them at their word, Yordan is any day, but no pun intended, it's now in his hands. We talked about the roster construction, lack of left-hand bats. You talk about relying on guys in the back end of this rotation like Gusto, Gordon. We don't know what the long-term health ramifications are going to be for Lance McCullers. So you look at the needs of this team right now. Looks like they need some additions to it. I just wonder if they, number one, have the asset equity to be able to make a move like this. But beyond that, just all things being equal, what do you guys see as the bigger trade need right now? Is it more pertinent to bring in pitching help to shore up that rotation or a left-handed bat to give opposing managers something to think about?
If I was making the move sooner than later, I'd have an APB out for the left-handed bat as an alternative in the outfield. Man, if it's someone who can play a little bit of second base, I think if he's a carton of milk, we're past the use-by date on Brendan Rodgers. I mean, what reason is there to think he's going to give you any level of competency offensively? You look at his whole career and what he's done this season. Now, I'm not saying, hey, Dubon can settle in there and be a good everyday offensive second baseman, but he's certainly not worse than Rodgers with the glove. And he's not worse than Rodgers. He's better than Rodgers with the bat. You know, if you're looking to call someone up, Jacob Melton at this point in the minors is coming back from his second injury of the season. Shea Whitcomb's their best offensive guy at AAA, but he can play a bunch of positions, none of them well. And he's another right-handed hitter. But Zach DiCenzo hasn't torn it up, but he does just enough with the okay of the game-tying home run the other day that I think his spot is secure. I just feel like at this point they feel they at this point they feel yeah that that well one of the pitchers will actually make it back, Arrigetti sooner we think than Javier or Garcia, but when the end of July rolls around, they may well need a Kikuchi type move. And let's remember that while Kikuchi was spectacular in his 2 months with the Astros, right, he wasn't the most coveted pitcher at the deadline. And for all the hue and cry and hysteria over all the Astros gave up, they basically gave up nothing.
Yep.
They didn't give up not one elite prospect. You know, they were decent prospects. You know, the tallest little person in a room of little persons. That's 2025 usable. So they can put together a combination of B-level prospects that can get them in the game for a fifth starter type if Dana Brown wants to engage in those trade talks. I just don't think we're at that point of the season yet.
I don't think we are either, because look what it took last year for them to pull the trigger on the Kikuchi deal. Jake Bloss had to come up, and even remember, he got hurt, and then they brought him back, and then they tried some other guys, and that didn't work. At least with the guys you're using now, they're not getting knocked out of the game in the first or second inning regularly or anything like that. They're at least giving you a chance to win the ball game. So I think things are going to have to get a little more desperate before they try and add a pitcher right now, especially if they really think Arrigetti's coming back. But I think Yordan's return is a big part of this. And you talk about taking them at their word, Brandon. How can you take the Astros at their word anymore? They just showed you again this week that they're not going to tell you. I will say this. If the news is good, it seems to be you can take them at their word. Notice Christian Walker comes up after he gets hit in the hand after the game and tells everybody how he feels and says the x-rays came back negative. So you get that kind of clarity with something like that. But if the news is not good, they don't really say much. So that really makes me think with Yordan, this could be a huge part if they grab that left-handed bat. Where is he? Is he going to be back soon? Who knows? From what Dana Brown's comments were, it sounds like it's up to Yordan. When he feels good, he'll be back out there whenever that is. And with the left-handed bat, who's that person replacing exactly? Charlie mentioned second base. Sure, that would make sense. But in the outfield, Altuve and left, you're not replacing him. I hate to tell you, but Jake Meyers is one of your best hitters on the team. He has the second highest OPS in the last 30 days. So not only has he been good for the entire year, he's also one of these guys that's gone on a tear in the month of May. OPS over 900, 333 batting average. And I know it might be a little silly to expect that to continue, but if he does show signs that he's going to be a good option, you're not going to take him out. And Cam Smith, he's really turning it on. You want him playing every day. So outside of somebody to pinch hit or to just give the occasional day off or to play second base, I don't know where that fits in, assuming Yordan comes back and is Yordan.
The one other important name we need to include is Victor Caratini,
yep,
who continues to produce timely hits at an excellent rate for his playing time. And with Yiner continuing to largely stink this season, I think not that you're going to bench Yiner and make Caratini your regular catcher, but I think you see a little shift, a percentage of playing time to Caratini. And if Diaz doesn't pick it up, it's not like you have to have him in there as a DH. On days that he's not catching. So kudos to Caratini. And medically, I just wanted to add, the Astros medical staff is not incompetent. But, you know, the greatest hitters don't bat 1,000. The greatest medical teams don't bat 1,000 either. And while they're certainly not incompetent, the way the Astros handle things with their announcements and obfuscation, it makes them look that way. They probably should reevaluate that. And I don't think this rises to the level of a crisis management team analysis. But how many times do we go to the same well on this? He's supposed to be back X, and he'll be back really 3X or 4X or not at all. It's just an awful, awful look. And frankly, annoying if you're an Astros fan or observer. I mean, hell, what do the guys in the clubhouse think about it when they're talking?
They may be used to it by now, and they may be told that the secretive nature of it is for their own good. I'm not real sure. Yeah, I don't have a fear per se that the medical staff is incompetent. I do have some questions about the return to play policies. I do have some questions regarding why Luis Garcia has had as many setbacks as he has. But without knowing all of the information there, it's hard to criticize. But that's the key, right? So I think it's purposefully withheld because that does protect them from criticism. The only criticism that you can rightly thrust upon them is about the secretive nature of what they're doing. And I just think that makes people more skeptical about the overall integrity of what's going on behind the scenes. And Josh, go back to your point about where does an extra outfielder fit. I know where our comment section say they're going to fit, which would be in left field because they want Altuve back at second. Now, admittedly, Espada has shown that he will play Altuve at second from time to time. I just don't think it's going to happen during games when Hunter Brown or Fromber's pitching. So maybe there's a middle ground in there where they can bring someone there who can play part-time as a left-handed outfielder. I don't want to call it a platoon situation, but maybe a situation where Altuve's playing infield on days when non-ground ball pitchers are playing. And then going back to the trade part of it, Charlie, you bring up some good points, and it reminds me that when we start judging a trade by the high cost of it, the Kikuchi trade was very controversial because people had fallen in love with Joey Loperfido, people who followed the minors loved Will Wagner, and people who covet pitching were very hesitant about trading away Jake Bloss. Well, the realistic side of it was that Kikuchi came in and had a 2.70 ERA for Houston while he was here, was a very, very productive pitcher while he was here. And then meanwhile, Wagner and Loperfido both been optioned. They don't look like they're ready for the bigs at all. And Bloss had a 6.46 ERA in the minors before recently being diagnosed with his own UCL tear. Shocking. So you never know until you wait and step back and see what the big picture looks like. And it looks like now that was absolutely worth the trade. So again, just some important perspective. Just a quick message that if you're interested in advertising your service or product on this show, you can contact our friends at the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is also in our description. Okay, again, me with my orange tinted goggles on, looking at the foreseeable future here. I'm looking at the schedule with the Rays, Pirates, Guardians, and White Sox. That's a pretty soft schedule. Now, you combine that with the fact that Houston did win 7 of those 10 division games that we identified as maybe not critical, but a good litmus test as to where Houston was within the division. You look at the overall trajectory of the teams in the AL West. We know Yordan is somewhere on the cusp of coming back. We hope, in spite of all these challenges that they've had, they now find themselves as high above 500 as they've been all season. They find themselves with the longest winning streak of all season, although the bar was low. What's the likelihood that Houston could end up with a multi-game lead in the division before Yordan even takes the field?
Possible, if not necessary, probable. You hit on the marshmallowy soft a couple of weeks on paper. I remember the Astros lost 2 out of 3 to the White Sox. Road series, right? They've been road kill for going on 2 months. They are going to see Paul Skenes, one of those games in Pittsburgh, and Cleveland's pretty solid and always pitches pretty well. Over that stretch of 4 series, the Mariners, in the meantime, will have a series with the Orioles, who are god-awful. Any Angels. Yeah, the Astros building the winning streak to a season-high 4 going into the Rays series. But the Angels had an 8-game winning streak a couple ago. So again, the short stretches of season, stuff can happen. All right, the Astros are going to have another air pocket where they lose 5 out of 7 or 6 out of 8 somewhere. Is it near at hand or does it not happen until July or August? It's about the overall body of work. Right, the Mariners have been somewhat baseball bipolar, 4-8. Then 18-6, then tailing off. And that's why, hey CL, objects in rearview mirror, closer than they appear. That's the side view mirror, I guess. The Astros could well be in first place by the day. A chance to build a little working margin. I'd tap the brakes on that, but to say it can't happen would be foolish.
Yeah, it could certainly happen, especially if they keep swinging the bats like this. But we'll see. They haven't proved that they're very good on the road yet. So, but at least, you know, some of the opponents aren't that challenging on the road. Maybe they'll fare better. But to Charlie's point, they lost to the White Sox too on the road. So we'll see. I think for me is, will the real Astros please stand up? And I'm talking about the offense because we know what it's been most of the year. They've been a bottom third offense. But if you look over the past 30 days, over basically the month of May, 10th in runs scored, 5th in OPS, 6th in slugging, 9th in homers, which was the one that really surprised me. They were really towards the bottom of the pack in homers, but you look at this new sample size, basically the month of May, top 10. So if this is going to be who they are, then, or at least between this and what they were, maybe more like middle of the pack, but closer to the top of the pack, not middle of the pack, closer to the bottom. I think you could have something there. And we talked about Caratini playing so well, and that's all true. But with Yiner, this kind of surprised me. Looking at him over the last 30 days, like everybody else, 273 batting average, 735 OPS. I thought it would be worse just based on the eye test, but he's actually played a little better. He started the month hitting 208. He's now at 229 for the season. So nothing to write home about there, but you have seen a jump in his productivity. But with Christian Walker, you know, he's in the last 30 days, he's only at 218 batting average with a 620 OPS. So he's really the guy that we need to get going. He started the month hitting 198. He's now at 212. So a little bit of improvement. That's why it was disappointing to see him get hit on the hand, because it feels like he's starting to swing the bat a little better, see pitches better recently. I'm hoping that's not something that slows down his progression.
One point that if you root hard, live and die with the Astros, you might not take much consolation from it. Actually, 2 points. There are a lot of lousy offenses in Major League Baseball, where if we match their lineup top to bottom against the Astros, you wouldn't be thinking, geez, why can't the Astros have that? I mean, the Yankees are obliterating the league with their offense so far this season. The Detroit Tigers are clearly and by far the second best offense. Then it's a pretty steep drop-off. I mean, the Astros are now above average in the American League in runs scored per game. You know, they're top five in runs scored per game. So within this league, while it hasn't been an offense that makes you go, oh, they're going to just kick ass and take names, shades of 2019, here we come. Within the level of competition, they're doing all right. And I mentioned 2019. Hey, if you follow the Astros through this era, the prism with which you view the 2025 Astros, or through which, is comparing them to all the much better lineups that they've had. And, you know, if that's the tail that you're chasing as a cat, you're never going to get there. So you're playing the course of 2025, and they have an offense which is competitive at this point with all but the super elites of the American League, the Yankees and Tigers. And we'll see about the sustainability of those two.
Josh brings up an interesting thought here, which is if they are somewhere in the middle between that awful start they had versus this current productive stretch they're in right now, if they're somewhere in the middle of that, which is in the upper 12, 10 teams in production, let's say that, what's the top end of results for this team?
I'd be surprised if they win 90. Surprised, not absolutely flabbergasted. They reached the one-third mark on Tuesday, 29 and 25. And I know just the general visceral response is 29 and 25, barely over 500. Well, 29 times 3 is 87. The Astros go 87 and 75 in the landscape of the American League this year. At worst, that's going to come very close to making the playoffs. At best, you're maybe a top wild card, number two wild card, or an American League West champ. So I don't think this team as constituted is better than last year's team or 2 years ago team, but it's not grossly behind it relative to an overall weak American League compared to the National.
Yeah, I'm about there, around maybe 90 wins. I think if they are a top 10-ish offense and the pitching holds, I think they should take care of the division without too much trouble. If they swing the bats like this and the pitching is this good, I don't see them losing the division. So, and I'd actually be a little more optimistic for what they could do in the playoffs, especially since your back end of the bullpen is so much better this year than it was last year. You know, when these guys get the ball at the end of the games, knock on wood, you feel pretty secure that Hader's going to go out there and dominate, and Abreu's going to do his thing. And now King's really building a resume of a dominant seventh inning guy. So, yeah, if everything else holds and now you have a truly elite bullpen, you know what it is with pitching, especially in crunch time in games. If you're really good at that, you got a good chance of winning in baseball.
And let's not forget guys like Ort and Dubin also putting in some good work in the bullpen as well. That goes a long way. How long can they sustain that? Definitely is the question. We'll see. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcast apps like Apple or Spotify, consider giving us a 5-star rating. Next scheduled episode drops on Monday. So make sure you're subscribed to this channel, Sports Map Houston, or our other channel, Sports Map Texans, as we're going to ramp up Texans coverage as we get closer to the season. But we also drop emergency episodes as big news breaks. So make sure those notifications are on. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. And until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.